This week's episode is a repurposed episode that I recently did with my good friend Ashley Montgomery, who runs Montgomery Entertainment and is my go-to partner for anything related to event productions. We discussed how I view event partnerships and how I've been able to fortunately partner with some amazing brands time after time. I hope you enjoyed today's episode after a quick advertisement by our two sponsors, Duplo Cloud and Luzmo. Luzmo is the go-to solution for any SaaS company looking to embed analytics in days, not months. Your users will love you and they will thank you for being able to get the insights out of your SaaS solution. If you want to learn more, go get a demo at Luzmo.com. That's Luzmo.com. Luzmo.com for embedding analytics into your SaaS app. Duplo Cloud's intelligent solution is a game changer for fast-growing companies. Experience it yourself with a demo with one of their product specialists. Mention this podcast and you can get 2 free months on an annual subscription with no strings attached. Go to DuploCloud.com/uncharted to claim this offer and get started today. That is DuploCloud.com/uncharted to get started today.
You and I have known each other since I think we met in 2019.
You nailed it. It's been around this time, 5 years. I'm going to say five years.
Okay. Well, we've got to figure out our friendiversary date.
Yeah, there we go.
We'll log it into the calendar.
I say we go with today, February 13th.
It is. February 13th is our friendiversary. Okay, done.
I won't forget it because it's Hopper's Gotcha Day. So like, you know,
we can
stay consistent.
Oh, I love it. Great. Okay, Hopper's my best friend. So Poya, for the audience out there who don't know you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, the career that you've had in sales and partnerships, and how you kind of got to today?
I was born in Iran, so my parents are immigrants, refugees, and I've always kind of had that chip on my shoulder. For anybody that knows me, they know I try working really hard. I try going above and beyond where I can. I got my start about 10 years ago. I got my start by sneaking into a career fair at USC. I went to a small little school called Chapman, and I snuck into a career fair, and I was very fortunate that a person at Oracle at the time, his name was Jason Treffs, hired me on the spot. Like, he was so impressed. He's like, look, we don't hire kids outside of these 4 or 5 universities, but like, I need people that are willing to sneak into career fairs. Like, they're willing to do what it takes to get the job. So, and I actually knew about Oracle. I had done my research. We just hit it off. So I was fortunate enough to start my career at Oracle, and I got really, really, really lucky because you get to meet a lot of people, you get to learn, they develop you. You get some of the fundamentals or foundational things that I don't think early stage startups give you. And at that time, I was super great. So like, I'm very, very grateful. But for anyone that's worked for a large organization, I don't think sometimes they adopt to what the market wants, right? Like, you have to wait 18, 20 months to get promoted. So funny enough, the person that had hired Jason at Oracle like 10 years before ended up hiring me at a young little startup called HackerRank. Worked at a couple of startups, did really, really well, took a couple of them from 0 to 20 million. And long story short, at some point, the tough part about startups is you get topped. Like, as they see success, they bring in the next person to get them to like the next milestone. So I was like, okay, I'm going to move into consulting. And then basically the last 5, 6 years, that's what I've been doing. Half my time is spent doing event sponsorships, which we can talk into, and that's where I met you. And the other half, I do software sales, but rather than working for one or two companies, I try working for multiple. I like it because I'm impatient and it's nice to have like different clients. And then two, the diversity, I just think is good for me because like, I get to see a different set of challenges on a monthly basis. So it helps my creative side.
That's awesome. I love it. And I do think it's important. And that's why I think you and our friends on a lot of these topics is that we have multiple clients. And I think it's actually a benefit, right? A lot of people don't look at it that way. But all of my clients benefit from my relationships with others, and we try to leverage that for them as well, right? So I think that's a super important part of those relationships, which kind of brings me into the next question is I get asked a lot about how we manage relationships with partners that we work with, not only our maybe our clients, but also those we bring into events. And since we're more event focused on our side, you and I, as you mentioned, have worked on a lot of events together with sponsorships and partners. How do you keep those relationships with them and be able to offer them different products that you have in your portfolio? You've got some that are maybe SaaS, you've got some that are engineers, you got some that are, you know, something else. But how do you find that to be an advantage for you to have all those different items for your customers in your portfolio?
look, it's never easy, right? I think if you can do things that complement one another, it goes really far. I try picking things that don't compete with one another, right? Like in a direct way, but they complement one another. So that sometimes helps. And you can only have those if you have a lot of conversations and you pick and choose, you know, where it makes sense. I think going long is a really good way to go. And I've learned this the hard way, meaning now I've become much less transactional in my relationships and my interaction with people. And the way I genuinely think about how I work with people is I want to do right by them, so they hire me time after time. And like that flip switched like 5-6 years ago when I moved into consulting, because what I learned is I don't like to be in the selling game, meaning even though I'm in sales, it's so much easier if you're in the retention game, meaning you get people vouching for you, you get people endorsing you, you get people, you know, recommending you for things. And you can only do that if they think you have their best interest in mind. That's my motto, like in everything I do, but more specifically in sponsorships and in sales. And I think it's so, so, so important to set realistic expectations and hopefully over deliver where you can. But more importantly, let them know you're over delivering for them. Like sometimes we do things, but we forgot to communicate it, right? So as long as they think you're communicating, it helps. And then the third piece is, I genuinely love the people I work with you, with my customers. And I know it goes against what a lot of people say. I enjoy building the relationships, and building the relationships to me maybe comes just naturally because I enjoy it. I like wishing them happy birthday. I like sending them photos of my dog. I like sharing stories. I like asking them how their kids are doing. There's maybe 10 customers I can think of that over the years, for whatever I was selling, they never became a customer. Like they moved on, right? They churned. I still keep in touch with them, right? Like, once a quarter, I'm like, hey, how are things going? What's new with you? Just today, I was chatting with former founder of ProfitWell, right? He was a great buyer of mine for many years, a huge advocate. And out of the blue, I was like, hey, I haven't talked to you in a few months. How are things going? And we just caught up. I think those things go a really long way in their perspective. And when I do need something, it just makes it so much freaking easier to make that ask. So that was a long-winded answer, but hopefully there is a couple of things that people can get out of it.
I love how you kind of change the way that you look at like sales cycles and the approach of this, because I do find that a lot of my colleagues who sell, that they're constantly running into that, for example, like that end of month sales, we got to close, it's the end of month, or we got to hit this goal because it's this particular time. And I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that puts on a different pressure in sales than if you are, to your point, just doing right by your customers and getting them what they need at the right time and in the right place versus trying to shove them into a sales cycle or a deadline that is created falsely for I don't know what reason sometimes.
Yeah. You just brought up, let's call it urgency, is hands down the hardest part of any sale. Like, I don't like, people say it's the relationship, it's building, like, no, it's literally getting people to move on your timelines. And I don't have the magic formula. And frankly, I've kind of found like I've cheat. I found like a secret code, and it's to do events, because events have inherently like a deadline, right? Like at some point, if people are smart, you have to sign the sponsorship so you can start working on deliverables, right? That could be 60 days ahead of time. That could be 70 days ahead of time. But like I've learned, if you want to actually treat people right, you have to press them to make a decision and give you a yes or no, because otherwise it's going to make it difficult to deliver on whatever you're selling them on, like the other side. The hard part is communicating that to people, right? Especially like first time founders or people, right? And the other part about it is you like there's a conference I'm doing right now, and the event was in May, but historically they've done the agenda, the sponsorship sales through like the second, third week of April. And I'm like, holy cow, that is like not that, you know, long of a turnaround. Once I got in and I'm like, look, I don't care what anyone says, we have to finalize our sponsorships by February, right? Because then you have to do the agenda. What you bring up is correct, but I don't know if I have the formula, except I've cheated just by going into something that inherently has a deadline. But the thing I will say, one of the beautiful things about being a consultant, because I have at any given time 3 or 4 things I can sell. I don't, as long as I'm doing okay at like one of them or like semi-okay at like 4 of them, right? I'm not desperate for this sale, right? I would obviously love to get and earn people's respect and partnership. But when you're not desperate, I just think it makes it so much freaking easier, right? You can be like, hey, no pressure. If you don't want to work, we'll go on, you know, we'll go our separate ways. And if you've given people deadlines and they're not meeting them, at some point, I think you have your answer, right? Which is, hey, it's been great working with you. Thanks for your consideration. We're moving in a different direction.
And I feel like people, your customers can feel that, right? That energy, it changes the dynamic of their relationship and the sale, I feel like, immensely.
I think the best thing you can sometimes do in sales is just get a no and make people comfortable to give you the no. So you see me do this. Like sometimes when I'm in discussions, I bring you in. Once you've answered people's whatever needs to be answered in the evaluation process, at some point, you got to tell them, our next step is to just get a yes or no from you. Would it be fair to come to that conclusion within the next 2-3 days? If the answer is no, but just let us know so, you know, we can prioritize where we go from here.
Yeah. Do you ever find that when you kind of take that control back in the sense of like that it's okay to say no and they don't have that cat and mouse game, that they actually come back later and like, okay, I'm in?
The tough part about this is, at some point, everything was a yes. The thing I'm still learning, I've learned to adjust with the macro environments, like the mood, because most things most people say are nice to haves, right? I don't care what anybody says, like you're not getting fired for not buying it, right? Like it's not essential. So you really have to connect the dots. But for the last 12 to 15 months, frankly, most sales I've done have been trying to convert people from a no to a yes. I don't have a secret like answer to this, but I think there's three things that help. One, whatever you're selling, you really have to believe in it. That's so freaking important. That's one. Two, I think you have to be open to collaborating with people and getting them what they want, right? You can't play this hard game like, this is what we do, take it or leave it, because it's just not working. And I learned this once I started buying something. We were going for a huge HVAC project. And I remember like the person we ended up going with, the thing that they said was like, look, some of these things are standard. The things that are not standard, I promise you, we will do whatever we can to work with you. And that like made such a huge difference. And I've learned, like you just saying that in this environment makes a huge, huge difference, because let's be honest, like there's more supply, there's more of us selling versus demand right now. I think that's really essential. And then the third thing is, I just think you have to learn to do things that don't scale, meaning everyone's so into like this game of let's hire SDRs, let's outbound people. Whereas like, I think right now is the time to take a step back and be like, okay, that playbook is not working. What else can we, you know, get creative and like start doing to get more opportunities for ourselves? And that's a work in progress at any given time, right? But you got to start getting creative in every little thing you do to stand out.
I think that's a great point of being able to adapt, because when I talk to my clients a lot, when we first start working together, I explain to them that if I don't produce a product for them to sell or for someone like you to sell, then it's a different problem, right? Like it's a product that you're selling. And if you can't adjust your product to fit those who are buying it, then you don't get the sales, you don't get the attendance, you don't get the other things. And so then you can't scale. And so it's a progressive problem. And I've found over the years with a couple of events that I've had the pleasure of working on is that, to your point, they want to stay stuck because it worked at one point, right? It worked great at one point, but times change and they didn't want to adapt. So then it's starting to not work and they can't figure out why. Your point is great. It's really important to make sure that you're reevaluating your event, your content, whatever it might be, to fit your buyer's needs in the times. When it comes to your partnerships and being a consultant versus being an internal salespeople, I think is a little bit different, but not some days, is that when we see sponsors come onto an event, usually we have two different types of methods that we've seen. One, a sponsorship team or sales team sells it. They turn it over to us for customer success. We take it through execution of the event and that's that. We see the sales team come on site. They interact with people, say hi, shake hands, do whatever. You are very different in that you stick with us through the whole cycle of the sale and the success and then the event. Why have you found that to be better? Is it just from a relationship standpoint, Or is it from that you like to see things through? Is it a personal thing? Or is it more of a you just like being involved the whole time to make sure things go well?
This is a really hard one to answer because there's a lot of variables, meaning there's a lot of variables, but at least when it comes to sponsorships, I am positive within reason, if you can afford it and if you can have the time, it's better to at least have the same person be there from end to end for three reasons. If they're on the hook to, you know, being responsible for some of the deliverables, they won't oversell it. So like, I think that's one component. Two, I think the issue with event sponsorship sometimes is it is very subjective. And even when you try making something objective, 2 + 2 doesn't always equal 4, and it can be different meanings for different people. I'm just saying a sponsorship package that you're selling, some people will value some things in that package versus others. I've not found the formula of how you communicate that from one person to the next. And it's just not the best customer experience when they have to repeat it. So I think if you can stay consistent throughout that process, it goes a really long way. I don't like to do the production side of the things, right? That's when I depend on folks like you or someone else that like to do the actual like nitty gritty things. I think being the face, not only is it the better customer experience from their end, but it puts me on the hook to be sure they know what they want. And if I know inherently I've done everything in my powers to do right by the sponsor, right? When they complain or have things that they're not happy about, I have every right to acknowledge it, right? Like, I think it's important to acknowledge it, but I also know where like it's on them and where it's on us, right? And and I found like customers that are reasonable, they realize it's on both parties and they do what they can to work with you and get better. I don't have the right answer here, but over the years, what I've learned is if you can be consistent, it's better because you set better expectations. But two, it just makes it so much easier from the customer's experience because it's just better and superior versus if you're doing consistent handoffs.
I will say one of the things that I've learned over the years and working with you and a few other people, one of the reasons on our side that we really enjoy having you guys through that consistent process, and I think you kind of touched on this, was that I've worked with salespeople who don't understand the execution side at all. And so they sell, they promise, they give away stuff that is logistically maybe not only highly difficult, they don't understand the cost that goes behind it, or if they make a change in what they're offering midstream of the 20 downward effects of what that does behind the scenes for the team that has to execute it, right? So I think it's great that you stick with it and you learn that. And I would advise anybody who might be listening to this, if they're on your side of the table, spend some time with your production team, spend some time with whoever's executing your event to understand all those behind the things, seen things that happen, because it will make the relationship better. You'll understand what to sell or not to sell or change on your team. And you can talk confidently to your customer of saying, we can't do that. Or let me ask if that's even feasible before I tell you that that's an option. And working really close with your production team is hugely important.
100%. And the one thing I've learned in the last 6 to 12 months, I no longer say yes to joining someone to run sponsorships unless they give me full control over that. I have to have full control over like, hey, if we're not delivering for a customer, I have to come up with ways where I can give them freebies. I think it's really important over the years, once you become experienced, to like fight for that, because if you're putting your name on the line, like you want to have a say on how you can over deliver for someone, right?
It's fun for us and to work with our salespeople to brainstorm on products, ideas, all the things that you could possibly do, because sometimes I feel like on the event side, we get kind of looked at as being the no sayers of no, you can't, we can't, timing, whatever it might be. But if you get in front of it just enough, we truly do love solving problems and finding something creative or fun for a sponsor to do, whether it's like a food activation or whatever it might be. Whatever can bring that sponsor more joy and happiness in their experience and get them more return so that they're going to come back again and want to spend more money with you or just return to the event each year, I think is super important as well for the sales cycle.
I think it's a partnership on both sides, right? Both on the customer side as well as internal side. When Plato needed someone, right, I knew exactly who to go for, and it was you and your team. And it just helps because you know like what it's like to work with that organization or that person, but you also know each other's like strengths and weaknesses, right? So you can kind of offset and complement that. And I think that's so freaking important to be, you know, working with a team or a group that's reasonable, over communicates, like when there are problems, like they're willing to, in a very nice way, to give that feedback, right? Like if there are things that need to be addressed. It's a work in progress, but so far so great.
I'm going to put you a little on the spot as far as we get this question asked all the time, and you and I constantly brainstorm on this, but what is your current favorite type of activation, get people to come by my booth experience?
You want a specific sponsorship? I think the best one today that I can think of is selling a registration sponsorship, meaning as people register, whoever's sponsoring it can do some sort of a giveaway, direct people, motivate them to go by their booth, right? Because like that way you hit everybody. But we did this at Elevate, right? Where we took that same concept and did it with every single sponsorship, lunch, happy hour, even our swag, right, was a hit. So I think when you're open to getting that feedback and trying different things and like being creative, like the sky's the limit with that same concept. But the one thing I've learned, hands down, over the last 12 to 18 months, booths can absolutely work. Like there's been this premise that booths don't work or blah, blah, blah. I think they only work if the organizers are willing to get creative and in a creative way drive traffic for the sponsor to their booth, right? If you give me a reason, if there's like a really nice value add that you give me to go buy the booth, right? Like at least it sparks the conversation. And then the only other thing I'll add, and I learned this from a guy named Todd White, who's the CRO of Guide CX. And what he told me, which to this day, when I hire someone and have them do cold calling, right, or like the SDR job where they have to write an email, we train them for like a week or for some time before, like, you know, we throw them in. I don't think anyone does that for when you go to an event. I think it's so freaking important. What he said is he usually get people in an office and literally do practices of what it's like when a customer goes by booth. Like, how do you engage them? How do you start the conversation? How do you hook them and bring them in? Once you've hooked them, what do you do from there, right? Like, and I think that's so critical that we forget, like, if you're gonna spend this money, there is a little bit of preparation that you have to do, right? And part of that involves, like, frankly, teaching people how to have a freaking conversation in a public setting.
So that leads me into my next question is, when you talk to people about return on investments of their buy into events, we've seen over the years a lot of different people need out of their sponsorship or their experience with the event, and it varies quite deeply between sponsor to sponsor. And I've noticed that, for example, some people just want leads, but they might not really think through, to your point, of once I get that lead or how do I get that lead on property, right? How do I approach somebody to scan their badge? But then once I get that lead, do I have a proper team afterwards to follow up on those leads and to do something with those leads, or are they just sitting there somewhere? So when you get into, or maybe you don't get into that discussion too deeply, but is that part of the process of the resale? I'm blanking on the name and I don't know why. Maybe it's because it's late in the day. But when they renew for the next year over and they come to you and say, hey, you know, we didn't have a huge success on this, that, or the other, do you help them figure out what they're really looking for, or do you not go that deep?
One, strike when the iron's hot. Do it at the event, right? If you can. 9 out of 10 times, they're going to say no, or like, sorry, we don't budget this way or that. But like, do whatever you can remotely possible to, you know, strike when they are feeling that fluffiness, which is usually at the event, right? This is an awful analogy, but like I was getting literally new tires a couple of days ago and I was in between a call or something, and that person's like, look, we'll drop you off at your house, go do your thing, and then we can drop off your car. I don't know if this is the reason why they do it, but they knew if I left, like, there's a chance I might not return. If you're trying to bring it back, like, that's what you do. And then the secondary part, let's just say people need to evaluate it, consider it, they need to look at ROI, right? I think there's so many freaking ways you can dice the ROI piece. If they're only thinking about it in terms of like, hey, we made this 50K investment, we have to have like 50K in return or something like that, I just think that's out of your hands and it's really, frankly, difficult, right? The best thing you can frankly do is ahead of time before the event, like do the hard work to ensure that they get a return and they have good conversations and they get the leads, right? The third thing is don't be afraid to challenge people as well, right? You say you want a return. What other marketing channels give you that, right? What did you guys do to get those? Did you invite all your customers? I've learned like in a nice way by just asking questions and finding out if it was on them or you or like somewhere in between. And the fourth thing, for what it's worth, I'll just tell you is if I know people, it's the right thing, they did the right thing, but for whatever reason, they didn't do the work outside, right? Either they know that and I know that, and like someone just needs to acknowledge that they need actual help, and it could be in terms of personnel or staff. And at any point, if I find out like what you need is a better fit for someone else, I'll make that intro. You don't have to pay me anything. If you end up hiring them, great.
Now, let me ask you about client dinners. I think you and I probably agree on this one. What do you think the value in return is on meeting with your clients on a smaller level, getting to talk to them over, you know, whether or not you're like you go to New York and you invite 10, 15 clients to dinner and just be able to not only introduce them to each other, but just enjoy the moment and get to catch up, like you said in the beginning, just to get to know them. How valuable is that?
Huge. It doesn't necessarily have to be a dinner, meaning like different regions I've learned you have to do different things. Like in London, when I planned a dinner every time I go there, like it's a freaking hit. People come, I don't know how, they find babysitters, they love it. Like it's just part of their culture or like whatever you want to call it. Like as long as you pick a good venue, you have the right date, you let people know well ahead of time, it's absolutely like a hit. I tried replicating that in Utah. It was not the case. People are much more family oriented. Once it's like 4, 5, 6 p.m., they have other commitments. So what I learned is do a breakfast or lunch, right? But regardless, those intimate sessions, meetings, whatever you want to call it, what's funny over the years, I've learned like you don't even have to pay for it. Like people enjoy it. They can come together and like you can split the check. Everybody pays for their 40, 50 bucks. But what's nice is like bringing like a peer group together, right? Like people with the same work experience, hopefully preferably in the same industry. They're all going, you know, through similar challenges, right? It's undeniably so valuable. And what I've learned is in some parts of, I'll just say the US, like people miss those things. Like most of us are so distributed and remote that anytime you can do those things, like people are just like so eager for it that like it goes a long way because like they're just eager for that information, but also for that like human connection.
So much for taking the time with us today.
Luzmo is the go-to solution for any SaaS company looking to embed analytics in days, not months. Your users will love you and they will thank you for being able to get the insights out of your SaaS solution. If you want to learn more, go get a demo at luzmo.com. That's L-U-Z-M-O.com. Luzmo.com for embedding analytics into your SaaS app. Duplo Cloud's intelligent solution is a game changer for fast-growing companies. Experience it yourself with a demo with one of their product specialists. Mention this podcast and you can get 2 free months on an annual subscription with no strings attached. Go to duplocloud.com/uncharted to claim this offer and get started today. That is duplocloud.com/uncharted to get started today.